The following interview, conducted with Miss Buxton of Thomas Street, Subiaco, was conducted on the 18th of August 1983. It was conducted by Ken Spillman at the Subiaco City Library on behalf of the Subiaco City Council and the Subiaco Historical Society. Miss Buxton, I understand that you were born in the house that you currently live.
Mm, 253 Thomas Street.
And so you've lived there all of your life?
Yes.
And your family moved into that house at around about what time?
My father bought the property in the house before they were married, and it would be approximately July 1918.
Mm-hmm. That's very... July 1918, just after the war. Was that significant, that the war had an effect on your family?
I don't think so, because my father was quite middle-aged when he married.
Why did they move into Subiaco?
My father had a business up in Menzies, a pharmacy, and at Northam. And I think after the Northam there was a fire there, and he moved down to Subiaco. And he used to live at, I've got an idea, the Leaderville Hotel. This was when he was single. And then he bought the pharmacy in Subiaco. That's why he came down here.
And where was the pharmacy?
Where Mr. Begley still is.
I see. So he was a trained pharmacist.
Mm-hmm.
Did your mother have a job, or did she work in
the
pharmacy?
No, she was at home.
And was she... Did she work before she met your father?
Got an idea when they came. They originally came from South Australia. I have an idea she might have worked perhaps for a year, but she was at the youngest, at the bottom end of the family, and she stayed home. But it was through my father being a chemist, and the family had a lot of asthma sufferers, and going into him, that's how she met him.
Were there any other pharmacists in Subiaco?
Yes. Southey, Mr. Southey, I think it was.
Where was that shop?
And he was right down more towards the bottom end, the Hay Street end.
Still in Rocky Road?
Yes.
Did your father ever talk about any competition between himself and the other?
No, I don't think it ever bothered him. He had extensive mining interests at the time. And I think he made more out of his mining than he did his pharmacy. But when the gold bounty ceased, about in the early 30s, I believe, he lost, of course, a great deal of money as the mines closed. And from there on, it was just his pharmacy, but it didn't seem to worry him.
Where had your father been born?
He was in England, Staffordshire.
And had he come to Australia during the gold rush?
No, he came out to Australia before the turn of the century. He came out actually in a visit to see his brother in the Eastern States. Liked it so much he didn't go back, but he was, I think he was qualified then as a pharmacist, but he was studying medicine when he came out here at the London University. And when he didn't go back, he qualified as a metallurgist. And then he came back and he went up to the gold fields up into Menzies, and he was he could either be a metallurgist or a pharmacist, and apparently there was more money in pharmacy, so he had a pharmacy up there when Menzies was a big gold rush place. And then he also bought one in Northam, and he put a manager there. Well, I believe there was a fire, and this was the days when Mr. Mitchell, later Sir James, was the bank manager in Northam, and was a great friend of his. Then after the fire, he closed the business, or sold the business, and I believe it is still a pharmacy today. And then he came down here.
When he came to Subiaco and was running his business here, was there any shortage of things for him to work with?
I wouldn't know. He didn't talk of it.
But there was no shortage of customers?
Oh, no, no.
And so he would have opened his pharmacy at about the same time as you moved into Subiaco, about 1918?
Oh no, he was here long before Mother came. I'd say he was anything from 1904 onwards. 1904.
And the house that you were born into was actually built a little later.
Oh yes, I'd say it was anything around perhaps 5 years when they bought it.
So for some time your father was commuting between the legal hotel where he lived.
Well, that was part of Subiaco in those days.
Oh, I see. It was just considered part of the area. Were you an only child?
No, I had an older brother.
And did he live in Subiaco?
Yes. Oh, yes.
And did he work in Subiaco?
No, he was in the Commonwealth Bank before he joined the Air Force.
In the city? And where did you go to school?
Well, both my brother and I went to Rosely Primary, and my brother went on to the Motton School, and I moved out to another suburb, to another school.
And can you tell me something about Rosely at the time that you went there?
Yes, it was surrounded with bush. There were about 40, I think, to each class. They had the playground divided, the boys and the girls, and we didn't mix, wasn't allowed. The only sport that I can recall, basketball for girls, and the boys had cricket and football. Then they had swimming classes in the summer, and we used to march down to Onslow Road and catch the number 7 tram to Nedlands Baths.
Onslow Road? The train actually...
Oh, well, we used to march down Onslow Road to Thomas Street.
Oh, I see.
And
yes.
Catch the tram at the corner.
That was a privately run tram, wasn't it?
No, it was part of the tramway system.
Oh,
it was a single line through to Nedlands.
Oh, I understood that the government... I may be wrong, you can clear this up for me, but the government trams went to the end of Rockby Road, and then there was a private one that took over. Was it all the same system?
It may have been earlier, but to my knowledge it was just the one system, because the number 7 used to come out of Perth down round the corner to a loop line, about 50 yards down in Thomas Street, and used to sit there and wait for the tram to come up from Nedlands, and then the driver and the conductor used to cross over, and then they'd take it back to Nedlands again. There was another loop line at Hollywood, and the same thing used to follow there, but the driver and the conductor used to sit in their cars and go straight through to Nedlands.
Did you actually have lessons down at the Baths?
For one term I did, but I wasn't terribly keen about it, but they did have swimming lessons in the summer. But the carnival used to be held at Crawley, all between the primary schools.
Between different schools? Mm. Subiaco School as well?
Well, I'd say the primary, yes, all the primary schools.
So, can you remember any big competition between the schools? You know, was there a lot of rivalry in other sports as well to be the best school?
I think there was, but I can't recall. We all used to barrack for our schools and wear our school colours and rosettes and things.
And can you remember the name of the teacher at swimming? But you would have had a lady teaching the girls. And
yes, I can recall there were both men and women teachers. But as I say, I didn't go very much, so that I couldn't recall them.
And can you tell me anything more about the trams, the fares, for example?
Yes. From the terminus, which is the corner of Rokeby Road and Thomas Street, down to the shopping area here in Rokeby Road used to be a penny.
Was that for adults or for children?
Be it children. Threepence, I think, for adults. And I think it was threepence into town at one stage, but later became sixpence.
And can you describe the trams themselves? What did they look like?
The long trams used to be, I think there are some around now, but the little rattlers used to be about two-thirds the size. You got on at each end, and then when the driver came to the terminus, he'd hop off and run around with this long rod to connect with the overhead wires, and then he'd pick up his driving gadgets and walk along through the passage to the other end and put them in, and off he'd go. The windows were from the roof down to almost floor level, and they used to have bars across to stop people from falling out. Very windy and wet in the winter.
There was no glass, it was open.
Yes, there was glass. Just trying to think whether they were probably the drop style. When they became very crowded, you rode in the platform either end. Oh, I'd have to think about that, I suppose about 50. Yeah, they'd carry a lot, yes. And they used to pack them in too. You know, there was no maximum number. You just, well, I can remember about 10 people, myself included, crowding onto the back platform and riding on. Because they had a wire expanding gate across, which they used to put to stop us falling off.
You called them little rattlers, was that what they were known as?
Yes, I'm fairly sure we called them the Rattlers. It was just a nickname.
Because everybody called them the Rattlers.
Yeah, well, it was just to distinguish them between the longer tram.
Yeah. And were those longer ones a later addition?
No, they just ran both of them. But the smaller tram used to go as far as Thomas Street. That was the number 2. The number 4 used to go down to the Subiaco Hotel corner, still in Hay Street. And the number 6 used to come onto the terminus, which was Rokeby Road and Thomas Street. And then the number 7 used to go onto Netherlands down the single line.
Do you remember any advertisements on the trains? Did they have them?
Yes, they had them, but I couldn't recall any.
Yeah. But there were always advertisements on the outside?
Always, on the outside, and then above the racks they had. You either had straps hanging, and then they had like a curved section from the roof, and there were advertisements all along there.
Now, you mentioned Hay Street a minute ago. Can you remember when it was called Broom Road?
No. It was always Hay Street to me.
All right, well, just living in Thomas Street, there must have been a lot of traffic of various kinds going past.
Yes, though it was only a single road, 2-lane from memory.
How was it surfaced?
Oh, just the ordinary bitumen, as it is today. It was always a through road, but not as busy as it became when they put the double carriageway.
And what kind of traffic would be going past? There would be the trams and...
Yes. The trams were on the left-hand side of the road always, the park side. Then you'd get the through traffic from what was then known as Perth Fremantle Road, which later became Stirling Highway, and that used to go through Thomas Street, of course, extended right up through West Perth and into Kings Park Road.
Was that mainly horse and...
No, it was the road, car, motor.
So your earliest memories of the traffic do involve automobiles and...
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Yes.
What kind of cars were they?
The very old type Chrysler and Ford. The old Tin Lizzie, as we used to call Ford.
The Americans.
Yes, the great square top. Mainly on TV the other day, they had from York, I think, down, and that was the type. I think it was the Morris Cowley and the BSA, or the afterwards motorbike, as we used to call it.
Did you need to be fairly wealthy to own a car, or did you not most people?
I suppose you would. I never thought about it. I suppose you had to be comfortably off.
Mm. This was in the 20s?
The very late 20s and early 30s, yes.
Did most of the people that you knew have fun?
Yes, but... Good number of them.
And at school, at Rosemary, their parents had cars?
No, because in those days parents didn't call for their children. You just walked home, either, you know, with your companions or on your own. Nobody seemed to be called for.
But the parents did have cars that they used for their own purposes?
I suppose so. We used to go out on the river on a friend's car, friend's yacht. I think he was Rear Admiral or some such thing of the Perth, Mr. Wigmore.
The Perth Yacht Club.
Yes, and We used to go down on the Adela, I think it was, Alexa was called, Sunday afternoons, and he had a little car. It was the two-seater with the trunk at the back. We used to open the trunk and sit in that.
And, well, if people had enough money to have their cars and so forth, was it generally considered a good place to live in where you were living in Sydney?
Yes.
And everybody was very happy with that. Had no intentions of moving elsewhere.
No, the families in our street anyway were there, you grew up with them.
And what about gardens in the houses? Were they elaborate or looked
up? No, they were just kept neat. I don't think anybody really... if you were a keen gardener, well, until you had a nice garden, but other than that, they were kept fairly neat.
Was it generally men or women who did the gardening?
We had a gardener.
So really it depended who was interested or who at the time.
Yes.
There were no definite lines. And they were mainly type things like rose vines, that type?
Yes. At school we were encouraged to grow. We had little gardens there. I think many children did very much gardening, but they tried to encourage it. But my parents always encouraged us to garden. They felt it was good for us.
What about fruit trees?
Yes, we had about 23 fruit trees in the back garden. The property goes through to two streets, so that the back area was... We had a few fowls, fowl run. Quite a few people had fowls.
Yes, I was going to ask you about
that. And, it was the thing to keep a few fowls and put some fruit trees in.
For eggs? And for
yes.
Any other things that people used to keep?
Not for food. We had plenty of pets, rabbits, dogs, cats. My brother was going to have a horse and then he decided it'd be too much trouble. So
you could actually have a pet horse?
Oh, yes. Yes, my father gave him permission to, but then he decided, seeing he'd been told all the things he had to do to groom it and look after it, he decided it was cheaper to go down to the riding school, which was down in Clermont.
Was it fairly common then to have a horse?
Not particularly. A few horses were kept, I think, on the corner of Austin Street and Nicholson Road. There was a large paddock there and there used to be two or three horses kept there.
Do you remember who owned that?
No, I didn't know. But I used to know the horses were there. They used to look over the fence at you as you passed.
What about Shenton Park Lane? Shenton Park Lane?
Were there any horses pastured around
there?
No, I don't remember. The dairy was further down, of course.
Where was that?
There's a lake bordering Aberdeer Road. Well, that was the dairy where the cows...
Hospital.
Yes, at Weathers, at Charles Gardner Hospital was. And it would be about equal to C block, and that was all very low-lying, and it used to be the dairy.
Was that Paulman's dairy?
I don't know. I was too young to know, but... I know we used to put the billy can out, covered billy can every night on the back veranda, and he used to come about 6 o'clock in the morning.
In the back veranda?
Oh yes, they used to come around the back. It was never the front. It was always.
Why was that?
Well, it was just the thing. All the tradesmen came round to the back. The butcher, the baker, the grocer, they all came to the back. The dustman.
Now, the milkman would come along with a horse.
Oh yes, yes, you'd hear the cows being driven back to the dairy in the very early hours of the morning, you'd hear them mooing them, footsteps.
And you would hear the milkman come along the road?
He had a horse and cart, of course.
Why was it that he had a horse and cart, do you think, and not a motor car? That was common?
Well, probably it was half and half at the time.
Oh, I see. And were there any other people, you've mentioned a few, any others that used to come around to the house?
Yes, well, old Wingon, he had a horse and cart, and he was a great favourite with everybody.
What was his name?
Wingon, W-I-N-G-O-N, Chinese, yes. Oh, he was well known through not only Subiaco, other suburbs. Nedlands, I remember him calling at my grandparents there.
And he was a greengrocer?
Yes. Always smiling.
And where did he have his gardens?
That again I wouldn't know, but I imagine at the other side of Perth somewhere.
Yeah.
But he was a very well known man, very much liked. His old horse knew exactly the houses he'd be calling at, and you'd see the plodding along and stop, and he'd just hop off and trot in.
What was the name of his horse then?
No, but I do know that it was killed eventually in a... It collided, I think, with a car, and a stake went through it and it was killed, and everybody was terribly upset. Mm. Then he got another horse.
He got another horse.
Mm,
when did he stop doing his repairs?
I would say it was before World War II, sometime in the early 30s.
Do you remember him as an old man?
Yes. And then we also had a Mr. O'Donnell who had a greengrocer shop down in Onslow Road, down past the present Shepton Village. There were some shops down there. And he used to come round on a horse and cart, and his horse used to know which places to stop.
Do you remember any Aborigines coming around?
Occasionally with clothes props, but only when I was very young.
Mm.
And they, clothes pegs and clothes props.
Mm. So in the 20s?
Yes, be say 1929, 1930 perhaps.
That's interesting, they seem to have been doing that since the 1890s. And so they would have stopped around 1930.
Well, that's the last I can recall. Because we had clotheslines right up, you know, until later, so that's probably when they did cease.
Do you remember, you know, what type of people they were? Did you ever speak to them?
No, no, you just smile at them and...
Did they speak English?
Oh, yes, apparently. Mm. Broken English, anyway.
Mm. And have you any idea where they lived?
No, but I know the props cost about a shilling each.
And did any Aboriginal children ever go to school?
Not that I can recall, no.
Well... You mentioned earlier that you consider where you live to be a good place to live and everybody else did too. Do you think that they considered it a better place than other parts of Subiaco?
Yes, I think so. That was considered to be the part of Subiaco, so I've been told.
Mm.
It used to be Subiaco.
Oh, you used to
say Subiaco, yes.
Do you think everybody did?
No, because somebody took me up on it one day. This was years later, and I said, well, I'd always been brought up to be pronounced as Subiaco and hadn't given it a thought. And then sometime later she came back to me and she said that she had made inquiries, and apparently that area of Subiaco was known as Subiaco, and down this way was Subiaco. But whether that's true or not, I don't know.
And do you remember any particularly poor parts of Subiaco, or what were thought to be poorer than others?
Well, the poorer parts were considered West Subiaco area, down beyond the school.
So that would be Shepton Park?
Yes, yeah.
And what about down toward the railway line?
Yes, round there and round the lake, which was just a very overgrown area and just bulrushes and reeds. Mm. Supposed to be out of bounds to the school, but the children did go there. I know they used to catch the tortoise. And also, I remember a little boy... I don't know whether he had permission or, but he was drowned canoeing there.
Mm. Was there a fence around that?
No.
Not in the 30s. Do you remember anything? Some people have told me that perhaps Perth Street or Churchill Avenue, as it is now,
wasn't known to me.
No. They mentioned that some that was one of the poorest streets in their estimation.
Yes. No, well, I really knew from our area down to Rosely because I went, you know, just in that area.
So how did your area then, Subiaco, compare with West Perth in your mind? Was West Perth
was better, definitely.
So West Perth was really one of the places to live and,
yes.
And yours was next?
I suppose so. I never thought about it, actually. You know, I'd lived there all my life and I just accepted it. It was just... handy to all the transport and school, Perth.
Now, in the 20s and 30s, the late 20s and 30s, were there any vacant blocks around your area?
No, all our street was built on. The only vacant block would be at the back of my property.
And Were all the streets surfaced with bitumen?
Yes, yes.
And were they surfaced with bitumen and had gravel on the sides, or was it all bitumen up to
footpaths? All bitumen across. Because whilst Thomas Street was not... I still think it was considered a main road, although it wasn't the busy road that it became.
Just going back to when you were a child and going to school, do you remember any of the games that you played?
Basketball was about the only one, and I think the girls had to be about fifth standard to be able to play that, fifth and sixth standard, which was 11 and 12 years of age. I don't think we did very much but sit around after that.
What about out of school?
Of course, out of school, yes. I used to play mainly with my brothers, and they had stilts, and they used to make me a small pair of stilts. And we used to play soccer. This is in the backyard, and of course, if I wasn't caught, soccer and football and a few things, as we had a very large backyard, and children used to come into...
What about King's Park? Cricket. Was that a place where you could go and play?
We were not allowed to go to King's Park. It was thick bush right down to Thomas Street. Unless we had an adult with us, though I know the boys used to go, but not myself, I was not allowed.
Was it thought that there were dangerous
people? Oh, we had prowlers.
So, as early as the 30s, there were prowlers around King's Park?
When I was about 9 or 10, I had to cross Austin Street to go down to Rosely, and I was stopped by a man in a car, and he tried to persuade me to get in. And then again he stopped me again at Hensman Road and tried to get in. And he exposed himself. Anyway, I happened to tell my parents, who father went to the police, and the policeman approached the headmaster, who was Mr. Jack London, a well-known headmaster at that time. They went around to every class and asked the girls, had anybody been approached? And about six or eight girls. Mainly down in the bush beyond where would be, I think it would be rugby or soccer grounds now, behind the school and bordering Aberdeer Road. Mm-hmm. Children used to cut through there to go along Aberdeer Road to their homes. And apparently some man had been on a bicycle. I was the only one in a car, but the rest were bicycles, so there were child molesters around at that time too.
And were they ever caught? That you know?
Not to my knowledge.
What about other crime in the area? Was there theft that you know?
If there was, I wouldn't know.
So it wasn't really something that you were afraid of, did
you? Oh, no, it never worried me. My mother had always more or less instilled in me never to go away with strange people, never talk to strange men, and never, ever to get in any cars, which was just as well.
Now, did you lock the house?
Not to the extent it's done today. We did always lock because father being a chemist, not that we ever had any drugs in the house, but still, and also with Mazzucchelli's, the jewellers, a couple of doors away, we did have prowlers, and so the house was locked.
Was there very close relationships between neighbours?
Yes, we were friendly. We ourselves didn't go, visiting from house to house, though we were always friendly and they were always made welcome if they came in. There were few we did have.
Did you feel that if you went shopping, for example, that you would know almost all the people that you saw?
Oh, yes. Everybody seemed to know everyone else.
And even the people in the shops?
Oh, yes, yes.
Can you remember any shopkeepers in particular?
Well, yes, well, we had Ray Warner. Ray and Pearl Warner had a corner shop on the corner of Austin Street and Keighley Road. And then there was a walk-through section to a haberdashery shop where Mrs. Warner Sr. had. Next to that was Mr. Mann, the bootmaker. And then there was a handy food shop which changed hands a bit, so I don't really know who had that. Then there was Rees Raffia Works, and we used to do raffia work, or the boys did at school when they were about 12, and we used to buy our raffia things, make coat hangers and serviette rings and things like that. And next to that was Mr. Pope, the butcher, and then a couple of doors down was the woodyard.
Where would the woodyard have been?
That'd be on the corner of Rosalie Street and Keatley Road, on the same side. That would be Subiaco side of the street. Then further back towards Rokeby Road corner, just round from Rokeby Road, was the wine saloon, and then further down on the opposite side...
That was in Keatley Road.
That was in Keatley Road. That's where the present post is, the Subiaco post. Then diagonally across from Arthur Street, closer to Austin, was a little two-fronted, double-fronted shop, which Mr. and Mrs. Burness ran, and that was also a grocery shop, and you could buy grocery also there.
Most of these businesses that you've mentioned were family businesses.
Yes.
Husband and wife working together.
No, Warner's husband and wife, but the others were just the husbands.
And the wife would look after the house.
House. Mm. I don't think people went out to work so much. The wives went out so much. Well, they didn't anyway around our area.
What about social occasions, social gatherings? Can you remember any?
Well, down at St. Matthew's Church, there were a few, but because my father's hours were such and my mother was ill, we didn't go out very much to any social gatherings.
Now, just talking about, I suppose, the other end of Subiaco, what was for you the other end of Subiaco, most of the central shopping area was concentrated, I believe, a little bit further down towards the railway than what it is today.
Yes, though we never went, most of ours was just centred around Bagot Road, because it was Cadman's opposite the newsagents of Very Flora and...
Sweets place?
No, there it was a newsagent. You could buy sweets there too. But it was a very well-known news agent. In fact, it might have been the only one, as far as I know.
I thought people had mentioned Cadman's, and I thought it was mainly as a sweet
shop. Oh, no, no. It used to have toys and news agents. It used to go back quite a fair way on the corner.
Of Bagot Road?
Bagot Road and Rokeby.
Which corner is that?
Directly where Crossways. Mm. Where the WABS now stands.
Yeah. And... what about, you mentioned the wine saloon earlier, where the post is today. Can you remember any other drinking places around?
No, the Shenton Park Hotel, I think, was the only other place.
Mm-hmm. What type of place was this wine saloon? Was it a house that people would
No, it was a shop front. Shop.
Shop front.
Yes, yes.
And people would go in and buy things to take away, or would they go in and drink?
Well, it was so quiet that you'd forget it was there. I would think that occasionally men would buy wine and go off into the park, because you'd find an occasional wine bottle sitting on the tram stop up at the corner.
But people couldn't go in there and sit down and drink?
No, it was just takeaway.
Mm. Was that all they sold, just wine?
Wine.
Mm. And beer?
No, just as far as I know, I only went to it once, and that was when I was quite old and felt quite guilty and scared that somebody I knew over the road would see me.
Can you remember then people drinking beer more than wine, or was wine more
popular? Well, my father preferred wine to beer, although he did have an occasional Guinness or beer for a Saturday midday dinner.
Where would he get his Guinness from? Was that imported?
It was, yes, oh yes. I don't know where he got it from. My mother was not a drinker, and she used to reluctantly have half a glass to keep him company. But he mainly preferred the wine. Wine and whiskey.
Okay, we'll go back to King's Park for a minute. You mentioned about the bush being very thick and it being fairly unadvisable to go in there. Were there cleared parts? As you remember.
Yes, the Plyne Plantation, I remember the original Plyne Plantation was there, then they cut down all the pines and replanted them, which are today's pines, and that was all cleared underneath, and they used to have occasional seats there. There was a child's swing up where the present children's playground is, and also there was a rotunda. Mother used to say in her teenage day, after church or Sunday school, they used to walk up there. It was the thing to do, to have a stroll up to the park, have afternoon tea. Apparently they served afternoon tea from the rotunda. But in my day, it was all enclosed, and I think it was a workman's storeroom. And then the rotunda was demolished, and later on they built the present child's playground there.
Mm. Do you remember another rotunda in the gardens in Sydney?
Mm, yes. That was more of a bandstand. That didn't have any enclosed centre. There were about four or five steps up with a wooden railing. Let me see. It was a fancy type of railing round it. I can't recall any band playing there, but I believe in Mother's Day it used to.
So they had stopped by the time that you were aware?
Yes, but it was just there. Also, there was a big fish pond.
In the garden?
Yes. I don't know whether that came after the bandstand or not, but the fish pond was there and had a cyclone fence round about that high with ferns, with a big rock in the centre. And later on, I think when Peter Pan, the replica of Peter Pan, came to Queen's Gardens, they later put a replica there, and Peter Pan was there for many years.
In the gardens there?
Yes, in the middle of the fish pond.
Mm. How big was the statue?
About 6 feet, I'd say.
And why had it originally been in Queen's Gardens?
Well, I think it was an original of somewhere in England, and they brought it out. I don't know whether it's still in Queen's Gardens to this day, but...
What else about the gardens can you remember?
It was a cyclone fence.
We were talking about the gardens. Were they well kept gardens?
Yes, beautifully kept. Along the fence, they used to have the most beautiful dahlias. They were really magnificent. And then where the old bowling green, I think it would be, before it removed down to its present position on the corner of Nicholson and... Rokeby Road, there used to be a bowling green there. I think that was the Subiaco bowling green my father used to belong to. Well, after that went, there was that was made into a lawn and surrounded by a garden, and chrysanthemums were planted there. Then by the present museum, I think it might have been, there was a huge water tower with a big tank on top, and they used to put great tubs of the chrysanthemums right up on the top, and they'd cascade down and flower. Oh, they were absolutely beautiful. It was really, people used to go to watch them, or to look at them rather.
You mentioned the bowling green. Was that on, before it moved, was that on the corner of Heytesbury and Rokeby?
No, it was, I would say, between where the present road is to the council chambers and the back of the present library. Just behind.
Yeah. And was that at any stage used for croquet, or was that earlier?
No, I've got a vague recollection of seeing that there, but I wouldn't say for sure. I know it was. It probably moved. Oh dear.
To the same place as the bowling
Same place as the bowling green, yes. I'm afraid I'm a bit vague on that point.
But the gardens being very well kept, I imagine that the gardener was a fairly well-known person. Was that
right? I didn't know. No, I didn't know them.
And the rest of this block was then very different to what it is today.
Oh, yes.
The City Hall wasn't.
The City Hall was the one that has been demolished to make way for the present one.
And that was, that's the council chambers.
That was the council chambers, yes.
Now that was being demolished, and that was closer to the road, wasn't it?
Oh yes, you walked straight off the footpath into a couple of steps.
So what was behind the council chambers?
It was hard to see because of the railing, the gardens around, and I'm afraid I wasn't very observant, I couldn't see. Thinking back, I said the bowling green, it might have been even the croquet there, but I know, I'm fairly sure the bowling green was
bowling.
There.
Yes, it was bowling.
Yes.
And what about the City Hall then, around there in Heytesbury, right?
That was built years later.
Mm. What was there before then?
Oh, wall.
Is it gardens?
No, I don't think so. I'm afraid I'm a bit vague on that too, because I didn't go up to that area very much. I didn't come down to school, to Subiaco's school, and therefore the only part I came down to was really down to Rokeby Road.
So on this corner where the library is now, the post office is at one stage. Do you remember the post office?
No, the post office has always been opposite, where on the present site anyway. But no, the library, I think the library was, the library I used to go to was the old post office.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Did you call it the Literary Institute?
That's right, and it was privately run then. And Mrs. Daglish was the librarian. I've got an idea her husband was a Labour MP, and I've got an idea Daglish was called after him.
That's right, he was a Premier, actually.
Was he? Yes.
A Labour Premier. I think he changed sides, actually, became Liberal. But he was a Labour Premier.
Well, I know they were great friends of my father's, again, the same age group. She was a librarian, and as you entered the door and turned to the left, she sat up in a raised platform which was boxed in. Mm. And she had glasses, and she used to peer down over you and make you feel very guilty. I always had a very guilty conscience.
Was the building that the Literary Institute was in used for anything else?
It may have been used for meetings, I don't know, but I was only about 10 or 11 at the time, and I used to just change books for my parents.
Was it a large building?
Yes, I suppose it was, yes.
It wasn't... I seem to remember a picture, I may be wrong, of the council being on one side and the Literary Institute on the other side.
That's right.
Were they separate buildings?
Yes, yes.
And the gardens were in the middle?
No, nothing in the centre. They might have been joined, there might have been doors through, but it was always just the library. I know there was a door behind Mrs. Daglish, so it may have entered into the council chambers.
So moving up from the corner then, you had the Literary Institute, and then the council chambers, and then the gardens.
Gardens. Mm-hmm.
And the gardens extended right up to that corner.
Yes.
You would remember the clock tower there.
Well, the clock's been there ever since I can remember.
Yes, it was there since you were about five or something. Do you remember that being a memorial that people used to go and put wreaths around?
Anzac Day, yes.
Was there a ceremony held there?
Well, I don't know, because when I was old enough to go to any, we used to go through the park to the war memorial. And I used to go with my brother and other surrounding children.
You would walk, wouldn't you?
We walked. Oh, yes, everybody seemed to walk. We'd be wakened about 5 o'clock on with the sound of feet walking by. People from West Subiaco used to walk up and go through Soar Avenue through to May Drive.
So it was a very common thing to do?
Oh, yes, yes. Crowds used to go. Not like today. You don't hear anything but, of course, cars. But then everybody seemed to. It wasn't just one or two. And you'd go through the park, you'd have to take a torch, of course, because it was pitch dark. And everything was very muffled and subdued. You know, it was very much perhaps more respectful than it is today.
Obviously very dedicated.
It was quite a walk, of course, up to the memorial, but as children we used to enjoy it.
I suppose getting up at that time and doing lots of other
things. That's right, yes. And then after you would go on to the war memorial and watch the sunrise come up, which was really magnificent.
Now, we'll go back to just talk about the First War, as you know, you remember people remembering the First War. Now, moving on from there, what about the Depression? Do you remember?
Yes, well, I had just started school then, and I'd come home, and there'd be, there was a table permanently out on the back veranda, and there was rarely a day that there wasn't someone sitting there, and he wouldn't be the first one. It'd be throughout the day, people would come, and mother would give them a meal. Actually, we had help in the house. A lot of people did in those days. And they'd give them a meal, and mother would either give them sixpence or a shilling when they left, and some bread.
Do you know where those people came from?
No, I've no idea. But I can recall just arriving home one day, and there was a man clutching the veranda post, and he was almost, well, he was swaying and practically off the veranda, and I can remember him calling out to Mother, "Oh, lady, hurry, hurry." And Mother rushed out with a slice of bread and he crammed it into his mouth. He was fainting.
And that was through unemployment?
Yes.
Do you think there was a lot of unemployment in Sri
Lanka? Well, there again, I was only about six and it didn't strike me, because years later I had to ask why those people were forever sitting on our back veranda. But I did. My brother did draw my notice one day that outside we had a great big yellow mark outside the gate, and we came to the conclusion that it was a mark showing other unemployed people that a meal would be given at that house.
And there were other houses that you knew of with
that mark? Yes, a lot of people did. I don't know about the mark, but I know a lot of people in our street gave.
And there was no feeling of guilt about that?
No, Mother did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the same thing too. My father bought milk and bread and meat and gave free medicine to people.
And when the war, the Second War, began, you would have been at an age where that would have had a fairly big effect on you.
Yes.
The effect that it had on the rest of Subiaco and people around.
Well, I think it had more of an effect on those who had people who were likely to be to go. My brother was of an age then, and of course it affected us more so. I can remember relatives coming home, knocking on the door to see if he'd been called up. Well, he was only about 18 at the time. But I do think that it affected people who had people who could be called up more so.
And were times during the war very hard in Sri Lanka?
Well, there was rationing. You had to adjust your life to it. Butter and clothing. If you heard the rumour went round that somebody was selling, or butter was in, or clothing was being put out, well, you'd just join a huge queue. The first one there really got it. The same in town, you know, the rumour would go round that somebody was putting out flannel made up as blankets, which were coupon free. So you rushed across to buy a blanket to make up a dress. And you learned to adjust, you had to. And then, of course, if people came visiting, if they stayed, well, of course, they had to give their coupons, because I think tea and butter and meat and clothing were all rationed. And you had to produce your ration card to get anything.
Anything at all?
Well, those commodities.
And what about in the pharmacy? Was that?
Well, probably things were hard, drugs probably were hard to get. But my father didn't really believe in business and home dovetailing. He kept it apart. So there again, he probably told my mother, but we didn't know.
Can you tell me how sewage was disposed of in early Sri Lanka?
Yes, to one side of the property there would be a passage down mainly at the side of the house and the not where the main part of the house faced, it would be to the side and the little used side of the house, and toilets were well away from the house, and the dustman, a nightman rather, used to come down and empty a pan from a flap at the back of the toilet. Then later I can vaguely remember sewage coming. I've got an idea the government paid, you had a choice of either paying yourself or the government could pay to have the sewage, and they paid for the pans and everything else. And I can recall the deep trenches that went across to the fence line, and where all houses in Thomas Street, Austin Street and Keatley Road, which was a triangle, were back to back, and the sewage followed the fence line right up to Rokeby Road.
So it was a matter of choice whether you got the sewage?
No, I think you all had to have it. But I think the government paid for it. State government.
Do you happen to know what happened to the pans that the nightmen took away?
No idea. No. Once the sewage came, that was it.
Did he used to come with a horse and cart?
Yes, I should think so. Yes.
Do you know whether the pans were sealed?
Oh. Whether he brought a lid with him, I would think perhaps they were unsealed, because he would remove the pan and put another one in its place. I think that was the way it went.
Well, we've talked about many things, and the amount of time that you've spent in Subiaco, you would have seen a lot of change. Can you just tell me now how you think Subiaco has changed?
Well, it's grown considerably. Families who stayed on for years and years, of course the children grew up and moved out, and the old parents either died or they moved away. So, and of course there are lots of units, flats and duplex around our area, so therefore we have more perhaps a moving community. People don't know their neighbours as well. Only the very old people who've stayed there for years, or their children have taken over the family homes. The shopping area near us has vanished. They're all either houses or units. We now have a double carriageway in front of our house instead of a single two-lane. It's now a six-lane, I think. And the park has been moved right back. At one stage, in the very early days, they put a huge, with fires used to be each year, it used to be terrifying, and they cut about a 12-foot swathe right down, which followed the park boundary right through to Crawley. Winthrop Avenue was more or less, I remember being told by my brother, well, that is gazetted a road, but it's not been made. Winthrop Avenue was only from Poole Avenue down to Mounts Bay Road in those days. The rest was all bush. And they cut this great swathe right round the park boundary, and it used to become a bridle track. People used to ride their horses. All that, of course, has all changed. The park was fenced with a post and rail. That's down. It's all lawn now. The bush has gone. And it's now, of course, a lovely playing area, which every weekend always has some party on it. The park gates used to have big white gates across every night, which were closed at 6.
Was that to keep people out?
Apparently, yes, keep the traffic out. And if anybody drove through and they were after 6 o'clock, they'd have to sound their horn for the lodge keeper, who then lived at the lodge, which is now an office. And of course, he wasn't too pleased. He'd have to come and open and lock the doors and let them out. They've, of course, been done away with. In fact, that would be where one of where the roadway is now, because they've rebuilt another lodge now further back, and I think the present one, the old one, is now office.
You mentioned the units and flats, Dick, and the way that people now move on a little more.
Yes.
Do you think that's a shame?
Well, admittedly, you see someone and say, "How do?" You smile, but there's the old feeling of someone close by if you need someone type of thing. That has gone as far as I'm concerned. And if you go to work all the time, you don't have an opportunity of meeting somebody. The local shop's gone. And that was always a meeting place, because you had to wait to be served.